I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And this is Wayne.
Well, guys, I am back from the big move. Stately Head Manor has relocated. I'm not in witness protection, I promise.
Well, that would be really bad because you're podcasting right now under your real name.
Or is it his real name?
Or is it
his real name? It does kind of feel like a fake name, doesn't it?
Well, you know, Landreth did not believe that Head was my last name. He just refused to believe that anybody could walk around with such a last name.
Well, it's kind of like Mr. Hand from Fast Times at Ridgemont High, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Mr. Head.
Exactly. Exactly. I got to tell you, this was the first time I have moved in about 16 years. And this will be my last move until they move me into memory care, because holy cow, I have never been so sore and exhausted in all of my life.
And that's with getting movers, isn't it?
We had movers, and our day started at 5 a.m. the day we moved. The movers left the house at 8:30 p.m. that night, the new house. And, you know, we just collapsed in bed like immediately after they left. We went and got breakfast the following morning before we ran back to the old house to do a last couple of things. And we're sitting there at breakfast, and the breakfast is set in front of us, and we each take one bite, and that's all we can eat. Uh-oh. And we're just so exhausted, so sore. And the waitress comes by and like, yeah, can we get a couple of to-go boxes? This, you know, and she's looking at our plates and she's like, did you not like it? I'm like, no, we're just, you know, just not hungry. And she goes, are you on the shot?
Yeah. Take that as epic, Aaron.
Yeah, exactly. Are you on the shot?
I mean, even with movers, you've got to box everything up and you've got to unbox everything because they'll load the box into a truck and move it, but they won't do that part.
Yeah, I mean, it was 15 hours on my feet that day, and I mean, I was dying. Like I said, this will be my last move until memory care. That's all I'm saying.
And even then, you're going to go in a wheelchair. So
that's right. They're going to have to wheel me off, and this shit will be somebody else's problem. That's all
just,
I'm saying.
Just light a match and walk away.
But I tell you what, my office is much larger than my prior office, and I feel like I'm a little echoey today because there's not a lot on the walls yet. But it's at the front of the house, whereas my other one was, you know, at the back of the house, and so I've got this great big window looking out onto the front porch. And I've become that guy.
You're watching your neighbors. You're a real window guy.
I am walking outside. What are you doing? I'm sitting
here talking to people. You're not just watching them.
Well, you know, I work from home most of the time, and so I'm sitting here the other day, and I'm, you know, typing away, doing my thing, and I see these two guys come up onto my front porch, and they, you know, pop open the sewer clean out, and they start, you know, putting stuff down the sewer line, and I come flying out the front door. Who are you? What are you doing? I'm like, oh, yeah, we're here with, for the gas company. We're doing a safety inspection. My gas company didn't tell me anything about that.
He's like, well,
yeah. And he's like, well, we're with, you know, and he rattles off the name of the company. I said, I'm going to need to see some identification.
Oh, my God.
And so they're like, really? And I'm like, yeah, show me your company ID. And so they both fish out their ID. I take pictures of it. I go down. I take a picture of their truck. I come back and I said, and I'm going to need the name of your manager and his phone number. And so I call the manager on the front porch with these two bozos. I'm like, who are these guys? And why do they feel like it's appropriate to walk up onto my front porch and just start work without knocking on my door? I'm like, oh, well, you know, we don't normally notify. I'm like, well, I don't care what you normally do, but nobody told me this was happening. And as far as I can tell, I got two weirdos out here on my front porch messing around with my sewer. And I said, and he's like, well, I'm really sorry about that. And I'm like, well, I'm not happy about it. And it was this long conversation. These two guys were just looking at me like, what an insane man. But this is what I get to do now with my great big window here. I get to go out and be that guy. Stand on my porch and go, get off my lawn. It's great. It's a new hobby.
God, Aaron.
Yeah, as you tell the story, I'm just thinking about all my friends that talk about their retired dads who they used to complain for things because that's what they can do well.
Oh, man, this is
great. I am mortified on behalf of you, Aaron.
Yeah. And I'm waiting for you to pick up binoculars so you can have binoculars out your big window.
Oh, it's great. This is just awesome.
Welcome to Old Guy Cast. what happens today to Aaron will surely happen to the rest of us if you listen long enough. Keep listening.
I'm just like, what the hell are these guys doing? I mean, it would be fine if they were down in the easement, you know, down towards the street. But they were up on my porch. On my porch!
You touched my property.
That's right.
Jesus. Oh, Aaron. well, let's talk about some comics instead of Aaron's curmudgeonness growing curmudgeonness. So as we record this, it is the weekend of New York Comic Con. So they've had a few, you know, it started Thursday. There's been some light news coming out of the Comic Con so far. They've announced some, you know, New York Comic Con is mostly a comic news thing, but I think they're trying to grow it. So like there was some horror movie announcements yesterday, stuff like that. But Marvel and DC have both had pretty significant panels as of yesterday, you know, of this recording as of Friday. And so in the Marvel panel, they talked about the Ultimate Universe and kind of now that we're 1 year into the Ultimate Universe, what's coming next. They announced a new Ultimate Wolverine story, which is going to be written by Chris Condon with art by Alessandro Capuccio. And they also announced an upcoming special called Ultimate Universe 1 Year In by Dennis Camp, who currently writes the Ultimates, and Chris Condon with, same artist.
I confess that while I looked at the artwork for Ultimate Wolverine, I did not, however, read the article. What makes this Wolverine different from, say, 616 Wolverine?
So this is basically the Wolverine mixed with the Winter Soldier.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So this is Wolverine, but he is also the Winter Soldier. Now, who is he is yet to be revealed because he has a full face mask. His mouth is covered. His chin is covered. His eye, everything is covered. I don't know how he breathes.
It's not going to be Logan.
It's not going to be Logan. But so that's that they announced that. And, you know, same day, DC had their panel about the Absolute Universe. And so DC announced a slew of upcoming Absolute titles coming next year. You know, we already have Batman, Wonder Woman and Superman. Starting next year, we will also have Green Lantern, written by Al Ewing, Flash, written by Jeff Lemire. And Martian Manhunter, written by Dennis Camp, who's, I guess, writing for both camps. And so, you know, I bring that up because, you know, I think we all read Ultimate Spider-Man issue 10 this week, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And last week we had talked about Absolute Batman issue 1 and All In, you know, DC All In and, you know, the special. And, you know, I had made the comment that, like, basically the story of the Absolute Universe and the story of the Ultimate Universe are the exact same. Right. Which is that a supervillain has been defeated in the primary universe. And then has basically said, fuck it, I'm going to go create my own universe in my own image. And, you know, and that's basically what happened.
Hookers and blackjack.
Yeah, with hookers and blackjack. And I'm going to take away all the superheroes' ability to be superheroes. Because that's literally what happened in the Ultimate Universe. And it's what Darkseid did for the Absolute Universe. So, you know, but now that we're 1 year into the Ultimate Universe and, you know, we just started the Absolute Universe, I got to tell you, Ultimate Spider-Man may be my favorite written book, my favoritely written book, I should say, on the market today, but it is the only good Ultimate Universe book.
Yeah, it's been the only hit out of the Ultimate Universe.
It's the only one that's readable. I mean, I can't bear the other Ultimate books.
I was going to ask if anyone's still in on Ultimates, because I read two issues and I could not bear it.
I stand corrected. I'm kind of enjoying Ultimates. Yeah, I don't care for the artwork in Ultimates, but the story has got me.
I wouldn't say I'm enjoying it, but I am still reading it versus every other Ultimate book that I gave a first issue of. I never gave a second issue.
Well, and Ultimate X-Men is just straight out garbage.
Yeah, I liked the first issue, but I just couldn't. It was too out there for me.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like the purpose of the Ultimate Universe, at least the original Ultimate Universe, was to have this cohesive feel of this universe, you know, with kind of this thread that you could pick up all the Ultimate Universe titles and have. It's kind of like the MCU, right? That all the movies kind of have a similar feel. So if you're comfortable with one, you're comfortable with all of them. You know, they all kind of tie together loosely. There's an overarching plot line. And I feel like they lost that with this new Ultimates.
More than that, the Ultimate Universe originally was a jumping on point for new readers. Mm-hmm. It was, how do you get these characters back to their basics without actually giving up all of that history that the main characters have? So you have new versions of the characters that start younger for a new audience that you can retell some of the stories in a modern, updated way. That's not what this Ultimate Universe is at all. This Ultimate Universe is all about knowing the main characters and seeing how they're different.
I think the setup is really interesting. I enjoy the maker. I like that Hickman background to it. I think there's a mistake they've made tying everybody's origin together, because it just seems. I mean, I think that's fine for a book. It doesn't work across the books, though. It makes everything seem a little shallow. It doesn't seem to have a lot of depth of color. And that's what I'm frustrated with. And I think, you know, to your point, Spider-Man's really the book that's working, that makes me interested, that, you know, when Ultimate Spider-Man comes out, I'm reading it right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Whereas the other, the old Ultimates, I'm generally waiting until I get to the bottom of my new book pile.
Now, so, the one thing I'll say about Ultimate Spider-Man, the only negative thing I'll say about Ultimate Spider-Man, is that the covers straight up lie to you on every issue. I mean, like, every cover portrays something that is not something that happens in the book, and I find that incredibly frustrating.
So I might be alone on this, but I have one other complaint about it. And Aaron, you mentioned shallow. I feel like Uncle Ben doesn't have a voice, doesn't have an actual character to him.
I think that he's too similar to J. Jonah Jameson in the book.
Yeah,
I mean, they're indistinguishable from each other.
Jameson has a voice. Every other character, yeah, I can feel who they are, but mm-hmm. Uncle Ben just comes off as flat to me. Like,
well, and with him being the surviving, you know, relative, right? You know, he survives, not Aunt May. You would think that he would have a bigger footprint in the book.
Yeah,
you know, his footprint seems very small when you compare it to 616 Aunt May, or even the original Ultimates, the original Ultimate Aunt May. He just seems very milquetoast. He seems very, you know, vanilla. And that shouldn't be the case. We should love every time Uncle Ben is on the page. Yeah. And I feel warmer feelings about J. Jonah Jameson in this book than I do about Uncle Ben.
Yeah, that is my only major story or character complaint I've got is Uncle Ben. He's not big enough for a character that's supposed to be larger than life. He's not living up to that.
Yeah.
But all the other characters I absolutely love.
Yeah. And for me, I don't mind it as much. I mean, I feel like he's generic, friendly elder person.
Yeah.
You know, he's the yin to Jameson's yang. And, you know, you only really see them in the context of each other and in the context of the newspaper. You rarely see Uncle Ben in the context of the family. And I think that's a choice. Right. I definitely think that's a choice on Hickman's part. I think it's inevitable that he will also die. I think the story that he's revealing right now, you know, which is the history of the Ultimate Universe, you know, I think it'll result in him dying, perhaps killed by the Kingpin or something. We'll see. That's my suspicion. Because I think one of the things this Ultimate Spider-Man lacks, and even though I love this book very, you know, but my only issue with it is that the motivation for Peter Parker is not fully realized for me. You know, Peter Parker just wanted for something more and was given superpowers and the super suit, right? But I don't, yes, Aunt May died, but it's so loosely, that's not the tragedy that has informed him becoming Spider-Man.
I feel like the tragedy is going to be something with him and Harry Osborn. It feels like they're building up to that. Like,
yes, something's going to happen there for sure.
I feel like if there's going to be a tragedy in Ultimate Spider-Man, is it MJ? I mean, you know,
you have single dad Spider-Man, possibly.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it's kind of, I feel like we are much, much closer tied to, you know, his wife than we are to his uncle. And, you know, the losing his uncle when he's a teenager, and those are his two surviving relatives. I think that is a bigger loss at that time than it would be now. I think losing his spouse might be a bigger motivating tragedy. And I'm not trying to, put MJ in the refrigerator, if you will, with all due apologies to Ron Mars. But, I feel like that might be where the tragedy lies for this hero.
Yeah. So we shall see. I mean, again, I'm truly digging Ultimate Spider-Man, and I liked Ultimate Black Panther. I will say that. I'm behind on it, and I think the trick with Ultimate Black Panther is it moves at a snail's pace. Ultimate Spider-Man does as well, but I'm more invested in the character. I mean, literally, one issue of Ultimate Spider-Man was just dinner. These books move at a snail's pace, but I find that I'm more attached to the Ultimate Spider-Man characters than I am the Ultimate Black Panther characters. But it is also well written, and it is very interesting.
Yeah, they did a fake out, and I think it was issue 9 that they presented the Iron Spider costume.
Oh, yeah.
I've always hated that costume. I just don't like Spider-Man with a suit of armor that somebody else built for him. And I don't like that design. So it's like, I was afraid he was going to use it when we first saw it. I was very glad that was not the case.
Yeah, for me as a whole, I think the Ultimate Universe, this current Ultimate Universe, which I was super psyched for, had a great establishing series, great, flagship series of this Spider-Man book. It's faltering for me, and I feel like they need to get it back on track to make it something interesting. Because if they don't, then it's just going to end up going nowhere.
Right? Well, and I think one of the problems for me is Iron Lad. It is hard to get excited about a character named Iron Lad. You know, I've never cared for that. You know, it worked under the Young Avengers, the Children's Crusade, all of that. But it, as far as leading your Ultimates, Iron Lad is not somebody that you're going to charge into battle with. Just saying.
I might.
No, you wouldn't, Paul.
Well, Aaron, I know you weren't here to talk about the launch of the Absolute Universe, but I have similar concerns with the Absolute Universe, right?
Oh, yeah.
I hope it's – I mean, we're only one issue in, and I thought it was a strong start the same way I did with this one.
I liked the setup book, right? I enjoyed that story. I liked how it built on the recent crossover. I thought it was really good setup. But of course, I feel like comic companies, DC and Marvel, are good at setup. It's execution. Oh, yeah, they stink at. But the setup is really interesting.
So, did you read Absolute Batman? Sorry,
I did not. I'm sorry. I can't get past this. And I listened to your guys' review. You made it sound super sexy. I am not getting into Absolute Batman.
It's super sexy, Aaron.
Yeah,
sexy.
I heard you. I heard you.
I really Batman. Enjoyed Absolute Batman, but it's one of those things where Batman is really easy to do an Elseworld story for.
Yeah, clearly. Why 90% of them are Batman.
Yeah,
I
guess, right.
Yeah, Superman has had a lot of good ones. Where it's really going to tell is when they expand into these other characters, because they don't usually hold a long-term Elseworlds-type story.
What I find is, for me, the Absolute Universe is only going to work if they find that lightning in a bottle that the original Ultimate Universe caught, in that you limit the number of books. Like, I think they're about to have 7 of them come next year. That feels like a lot. I feel like you should go 4 or 5 max. But you have to find a way, not necessarily to tie them all together like every hero has the same origin, but to have a similar feel and vibe and provide that comfort that you can comfortably read all the books and get that entire story. And that all of them are quality. And that's my concern, because that's not what we're getting with the current Ultimate. And I'm concerned that they're going to stretch out the Absolute too much next year. But we'll see. I mean, right now it's off to a strong start. But, also in Marvel, coming out of New York Comic Con, they announced that, the first – arc of that One World Under Doom.
God, I can't wait.
Is going to be the rise of Emperor Doom.
Gonna need a t-shirt.
Right? All hail One World Under Doom. That would be awesome. Yeah. I'm sure they have them.
I'm so down for that. You know, I still drink out of my One Nation Under Doom 2099, milk.
Nice.
I'm saying it. Nice. So I still got it.
Well, and now I'm really wondering, are they going to introduce Doom as part of the Fantastic Four in the cinematic universe? Because if they're doing a huge Doom story for next year, that's going to, you know, go into next year, that feels like they're building up the character for his on-screen appearance.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I think this is, so they, the way they talked about it, they said, this is the biggest Marvel initiative since, I mean, of course, this is all bloviating like they always do, but they said, this is basically going to be something akin to the post-Siege era of Marvel, which was Norman Osborn and the Dark Avengers. And I don't remember the name of that whole year plus that they had Norman Osborn basically as the head of the Marvel universe. They're saying this is going to be something like that, where, you know, Doom is going to be ever present across the entire Marvel universe. And it's really starting with this rise of Emperor Doom.
Yeah.
So I'm super psyched about it. I think it'll be a really, I don't know, it's scratching my itch. So Dark Reign was what I was thinking of, that previous era of Marvel. So
yeah. One of the things that really interested me in the preview artwork was seeing Doom up on a podium, still having Doctor Strange's Cloak of Levitation.
Yeah, so he's the Sorcerer Supreme.
He's the Sorcerer Supreme going into this, you know, storyline still.
Now, I am not reading the current Fantastic Four run.
Nor am I.
But no. I'm assuming that's got to be tying in or setting up some of this stuff in some way. I don't know. I guess it just didn't interest me, but I didn't even try, frankly. And I think it's because, I hate to say this, but Marvel restarts shit so many times. It's like, how much am I going to invest in this run? Because in 12 issues,
exactly,
it'll have a new creative team and restart.
Well, I was really into the old run, but then when they restarted it, I gave it a couple issues and I just did not like this run at all.
Yeah, same. And when they do these, you know, big renumberings, you know, it's a whole brand new volume. It makes it easy jump off points.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if they continued with some legacy numbering, I might stay in. But yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah, the way that book was when I picked up the first couple issues, I don't know that book will be where they build up any of this Doom stuff. Doom has long ago, like, surpassed being a Fantastic Four villain to become the entire Marvel Universe villain.
Yeah, well, and now with Robert Downey Jr. playing him, Doom is going to surpass Fantastic Four in popularity as well.
Yep.
So we shall see. But since you're back, Aaron.
I'm back.
Back in business. We can talk about your thoughts on Agatha All Along.
Now, just to refresh listeners.
Yes.
I started the first episode of Agatha All Along 3 or 4 weeks ago and hard quit it 15 minutes in. I just couldn't bear it. Now, I will wholly own that I really wasn't in a good frame of mind. You know, I had a bunch going on getting ready for the move, was tired and, you know, just didn't. What I noticed when what I was watching was comfort television, things that I've seen before that I really enjoy. Anything new, I just didn't have any appetite for. So I recognize and own I wasn't in a good frame of mind, but something just irritated the shit out of me about the first 15 minutes that I watched. And it was that Catherine Hahn's performance was very over the top. And it felt like she was doing a caricature. And of course she was. But it just didn't land with me. I'm like, I can't do a whole episode of this. And I jumped out of the show. But you, Wayne, and Andrew, you know, all told me, you know, it's really a show. It gets better. You know, and, you know, I struggle with, and I know, Paul, you do too. You know, don't tell me it gets better, you know, an episode or three down the line. You know, that's a lot of time to commit to finally start enjoying a thing. But, you know, you guys said, you know, it gets better midway through that episode. And yep. sure enough, it did. I didn't time it, but it's around the half hour mark. All of a sudden, oh, this is a much better show than it seemed. I think the big fault in that first episode is that they stayed too long in that groove of, you know, kind of spoofing a True Detective like story. With Catherine Hahn doing, you know, sort of an amalgamation of, you know, hard-bitten lady detectives that we've seen in recent prestige television. And I appreciated that. I appreciated the work she was doing. I needed about 5 minutes of that.
It did go on a bit long.
Yeah, I didn't need 25 minutes of
it. There were things in that I liked, though, and it was a little bit of bringing the mystery in. Mm-hmm. And I really like the... I don't know the actress's name, but the character is like Vidal, the other witch.
Oh, the green witch.
Yes, I liked her character.
Yeah.
In that, you know, TV show version.
Yeah.
I even liked her then, and then I liked her when she became a witch. I mean, she was, for that first episode, the standout character for me.
Oh, you're talking about Aubrey Plaza.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, episodes 2 through 6 are terrific. I burned through after I finished watching the first episode last night. I burned through the remaining episodes. Unfortunately, they're short. I guess I'm current now.
Through episode 6 and so episode 6. So episode 5, at the end of episode 5, it is revealed what was pretty obvious to all of us on this podcast is that was Billy Maximoff. Teen was Billy Maximoff. But what was revealed in episode 6, Wayne, if you want to take your headphones off, feel free to, because I know Wayne hasn't seen episode 6, is that he is on the road not to bring back the Scarlet Witch, his mother, but to find his twin brother, Tommy. So now that being said, I'm pretty sure both will happen. it feels like if we go through 9 episodes and don't know what the hell's up with the Scarlet Witch, even if it's just a reveal at the end of the blast, you know, at the end of the credits that she's still alive or something, I would be shocked.
In that first episode, there's the body and they never show you the face on the body. Right. And they identify the body in the morgue as Wanda Maximoff. Yeah. And then they also identify the body as Agatha Harkness.
Yeah, because the body isn't real. It's in her head.
Right. Yeah. I just wonder. I feel like we're going to come back to that scene. That scene feels unfinished to me. I keep thinking we're going to come back to that. So I really strongly wonder about that. I also liked how the toe tag looked like a library card.
Yeah, that's all they had on hand.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, well, and it was like a callback because they already had dealt with a library card in the episode.
Right.
One of the big things coming up, Aaron, is the last, I believe, 2 episodes are going to be released together, just like the first 2 episodes were.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll get a new episode because I think they come out Wednesday evenings.
So we'll get one next week and then 2 the following week.
2 on October 30th.
Yeah. Yep. For Halloween.
That's cool. So far, so good. I mean, you know, other than my complaints on episode 1, I've enjoyed everything else about the show. I it's one of those, there's not a lot of fat on the bone once you get past episode 1.
Yeah, I am truly enjoying it. I will say, for what it's worth, I don't have the Catherine Hahn love that everyone else does.
Uh-huh.
And I find her the least interesting character on the show, if I'm being honest. And when it's just her and one other person, it's fine. But when it's the whole group, I find that she fades into the background because everyone else is also memorable.
Yeah. I would like to lodge a strong complaint about that damn song being burned into my brain.
The Witch's Road?
The down, down, down the road.
Yeah.
And we get past that episode. I'm like, okay, well, I can burn this out of my brain. And then they sing it again, or a version of it, in the glam rock episode. And by the way, their costumes in the glam rock episode were outstanding. Were outstanding. I just loved them.
Yeah. So when you talk about it burned in your head, it's not the song itself burned into my head. It's the image of her neighbor. I can't remember her.
Oh, Mrs. Hart.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like the smile on her face, waving her arms, being so excited just to be involved in something while she's singing it.
It's funny. But I'm enjoying it. I'm looking forward to seeing how it wraps up.
Yeah.
But Aaron, before we move on to comics, I'm actually going to, there's a new show on Peacock that that's kind of also, I think, wrapping up around Halloween time. Probably more up your alley than it is Wayne's alley, because it's a bit spooky. It's called Teacup.
I've not heard of it.
So it's a new show from I think it's a Blumhouse show. I could be wrong on that. You know, Blumhouse is the producers of every horror movie that's been released in cinema over the last probably 5 to 10 years.
Right.
Is probably Blumhouse, right? So you know, Teacup is a new show from Blumhouse. It's also produced by James Wan, who is the director of every other horror movie that you've liked in movie theaters, like Insidious and The Conjuring and things like that. So it's set on a farm in Georgia. And, you know, it's hard to describe, but basically the concept is that these people end up gathering on this farm in Georgia. And one night, a man in a gas mask spray paints a giant circle around the property. And if you step out of the circle, you basically melt. And so, you know, but we don't know why. We don't know what's happening yet. There's a lot of mystery around it. It's got a lot of good creep factor. But it stars Scott Speedman from Felicity and Yvonne Strahovski or whatever her name is from Chuck way back when. I'm enjoying it. It's and, you know, much like Agatha All Along, the episodes are short. They're only half hour episodes and they release two at a clip. Hmm. So that's nice. Four episodes.
And it's called Teacup.
Teacup, because the concept is this is hardly a spoiler, but in the first episode, there's like a bug crawling on the ground and they put a teacup over it.
Wife does.
Yes.
Yeah.
In theory, that's basically what's happening to them, right? With the circle around the property, is that someone has put a teacup over them. Mm-hmm. So that's the metaphor there. But I'm honestly really enjoying it. It's it's very much, you know, it's kind of like one of those Lost type shows where there's like, what is happening? What's the mystery? I'm hoping that it's all revealed within the span of this one season. I would really be pissed if I'm signing up for some shit that's not going to be revealed until season 5, 6 years later. Yeah. Hopefully I get a full story by Halloween time.
You know, my biggest complaint about those kind of shows is that the mystery is always better than the reveal. So many of those shows I've watched and like absolutely loved until they get to reveal part, and the reveal just never lives up to the hype of what they've built.
Yeah, that's obviously a concern with all these things. But I will say the reason it doesn't annoy me as much with this show, because I will tell you, this is not normally my kind of show, but it's well acted and it's well written. But I think one of the things that is working for me is that it's only a half an hour. Yeah. It's only a half an hour,
it's not a smaller investment, right?
Yeah, it's a smaller investment. It's not a 22 episode season like Lost and all that stuff. Like it is just the right amount of investment for the type of mystery it is. Now, again, like I said, if I get through essentially, you know, if it's 8 episodes, if I get through 4 hours of this and it's not revealed, then I'm out. But right now it's bite size enough to bring me in. But you know what I'm out on, guys?
Oh, dear.
I'm hard out on Avengers Assemble.
You don't like it.
I don't like it.
I'm with you, Paul.
I feel like the second issue was the exact same as the first issue.
It was.
And here's the thing. I actually genuinely like the premise of it. I like the characters they have chosen.
I don't like how these characters are written, though.
But I don't like how it's written, and I don't like how it's drawn.
Yeah, this does not feel like Hawkeye. Hawkeye feels completely different than any version I've ever read in a way that I don't like. I love Night Thrasher, but I don't like him in this book, and I really don't like his interaction with the others. I love that they have like Avengers jackets to all look the same, but
I hate that.
I don't like how it was done. Like I like when heroes have costumes to identify the team they're on, but it didn't work here.
I I was laughing because, you know, Night Thrasher, the 90s superhero, brings the 90s jackets to the Avengers.
And I'm it's funny that you guys don't like it. I like it, but it annoys me that it's literally just a jacket. Like, if he had, you know, if he had designed uniforms, like consistent uniforms, we've seen that in characters before. Like, literally, the freaking Avengers Endgame, right, where they go back in time and they all have, like, distinct but similar uniforms. I would be fine with that, but it's like, here's your fucking jacket. Here's your Letterman jacket. Yeah. Throw it on whatever you're wearing. Now you're an Avenge ERS, the Emergency Response Squad.
That's stupid, I hate that too. Yeah. You know, there are parts of it that I like. I mean, I think that I love that they're back in the mansion. I love that Jarvis is there. And that's it. I think that it is awfully audacious of Night Thrasher, who is brand new to the team, to come walking in like, hey, I'm gonna create us a team uniform without consulting anybody. You know, here you've got, you know, Janet Van Dyne on the show, who on the team, who has a long history of designing outfits and uniforms for teams, and, you know, doesn't consult her. I'm just a little amazed at this, you know, audaciousness on, you know, hey, buddy, you're new to the team. What are you doing?
You know what this is, Aaron? Now that you put it in my head because you called it the show. This is a cartoon. This is a Saturday morning Avengers cartoon on Disney Plus or Disney XD or whatever. Because again, the first two issues are literally the exact same thing, just in different locales. Yeah. They show up a place where chaos is reigning, and they, you know, in the first episode it was, I think, zombies or something, and in the second issue it's ghost apes, but it's the same thing.
Well, and it doesn't.
Yeah, the third issue is vampires, so it's
right down to bland versions of the characters, just like a cartoon would do. The one scene I really enjoyed in the book was the conversation between Julie Powers and
that was a good scene between her and the Wasp
and her and Van Dyne. That was a great scene. The rest of the book didn't live up to it, and we're dealing with ghost monkeys. Why in the world did I not love this?
Yeah. Well, and I think fundamental to the issue is that the big bad in this book is the Serpent Society. And I've always felt like the Serpent Society was like AIM. They're an awfully lame bad guy organization. I have a hard time getting excited about, oh my God, we're going to fight the Serpent Society. Yeah, no. I need a better villain than that. And, you know, I feel like Captain America isn't Captain America in this book. There is no resemblance between this Captain America and the Captain America in his ongoing comic.
No, he's very passive. He's just there, honestly.
Yeah. And he's not leading. That's the thing, is I'm just like, you know, where's Cap, you know?
Well, and that's how I feel about most of the characters. These are bland versions of them. And they're characters I love, but I'm not feeling that these are any of those characters. Yeah. The Hawkeye is the most off to me, with Cap being like right up there with him. This just doesn't feel like these characters.
Yeah. Well, definitely. I have what I feel like is going to be a controversial take on Nightwing issue 118, the big wrap up to Tom King's story here. Mm-hmm. I did not care for it.
I will tell you, I liked it. I feel like this Fallen Grayson, I think, was, what is it, 5 issues or 6? Let me scroll. It's 5 issues.
I honestly don't know, because I quit reading the book a while back. Mm-hmm. I came back for the finale.
I feel so. This Fallen Grayson thing. My frustration with Fallen Grayson is they spent 4 issues basically with Nightwing getting his groove back, and then 1 issue with him with the groove back, and everything. And, you know, when I turned the page, when I opened up this book and I turned the page and it said digital pages were only 30 pages, I'm like, there is a lot to wrap up in 30 pages.
Right.
And it truly felt like they jammed a 60, you know, 2 issues into 1. I would rather, and maybe it's timing, because it needed to be timed in with this absolute stuff and this all in stuff. But I truly felt like this was 2 issues worth of story in 1, and they just jammed everything in and wrapped it up as succinctly and quickly as possible. You know, this Tony Zuko thing, what's the big deal with Tony Zuko? Who knows, because he just got shot in the face. And, you know, why was he trying to kill baby Dick Grayson? We don't know. because they took them off the plate so quickly. It wrapped up everything too quickly, too succinctly.
You know what part of the book felt like to me, Paul? It felt like an event book where you would have individual issues that of what's going on elsewhere.
Yeah, like
when they check in with the other Bat family, and of course. I love that, of course, he does comment, where Tim is the one that finds the clue, figures out where the kids are, mm-hmm. and basically is the one to save the day in the background. It feels like that would be its own, like, tie-in issue that we would read.
Yeah, it felt very rushed to me, and I got to tell you, I almost threw my fucking iPad across the room when Bitewing got shot.
Yes. I was so angry, and thankfully they didn't kill the dog, but if they would have.
Okay, so Nightwing clearly loves Haley, aka Bitewing, yeah. right? So here is Bitewing who leaps in to save him and takes a bullet or whatever that weapon is to the chest in the effort to save Dick Grayson. And Dick Grayson doesn't immediately call for help or rush her off for care. Instead, he continues to fight hopeless, settle things, have a conversation, and then picks up his dog and walks off. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, because he tells her she'll be okay. How do you know she'll be okay? She's been shot.
That's right. And what looks like in the chest, right? Yeah. And so, I mean, if that were my dog... I probably would have quickly ended the scenario, but I wouldn't have had all of this dialogue with the bad guy while my dog is bleeding out. You know, I mean, I would have liked to have seen, and I know this is out of character, but I would have been okay for him just reaching over and snapping the guy's neck so that he could take care of Haley. I know that's out of character, but that's what Aaron would have done.
Yeah. I find it hard to believe that he's never visited his parents.
Same.
Grave.
Yeah.
For everything we know about this character, that he's never been there, I just can't buy that.
Now, as harsh as I have been on the storytelling in this last issue, and let me just add one thing before I say this. I have a real problem with the fact that if you're going to have a serialized story, you cannot have your climax, and really this book had its climax in the previous issue.
Yeah.
When he, you know, resolved his fear of heights that he had developed, right? Mm-hmm. That was really, you know, the catalyst, because everything else just falls into place. And that's one of the frustrating things about this story is that, you know, it's not rising action. It's everything else is downhill from here. And, you know, it's like Hopeless. Was that his name? What's the guy's name?
Heartless.
Thank you. Heartless is this big bad. And suddenly he's not, because, you know, Grayson's got his groove back. There was really very little, you know, thrill or excitement in this book. It was just all, you know, denouement, it felt like. And so I found that really frustrating. If you're going to do that, you've got to do it all in the same issue. You make it a double-sized issue. And I think I would have been a lot more satisfied reading this as part of maybe a 60 or 80 page book.
Yeah.
With combining last week's story and this week's story, and maybe a little bit more epilogue in this one.
Yeah, I can say I missed a lot having not read the story leading up to it. I didn't know about his fear of heights that he had developed.
Right.
I don't have any understanding of how in the world Heartless convinced people that he was Dick Grayson.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's overall, I will say, you know, so I've read every issue of this Tom Taylor run on Nightwing. And overall, I will say it has been a great run. It was a strong, strong first half. And the second half was inconsistent. And I think part of that is that Tom Taylor maybe got stretched too thin, mm-hmm. You know, doing this Titan stuff and some of these other books that he's taken on, you know, like I think he co-wrote DC versus Vampires, and he's just, you know, he's had a lot going on his plate. I feel like the ending was fine. I don't feel like it was enough. Right. I don't feel like it was, you know, it stuck the landing truly, but it was fine.
Let me say something kind about the book. Mm-hmm. The Bruno Redondo artwork is gorgeous. It's just gorgeous. I cannot say enough about how glorious the artwork is.
I particularly love his Barbara Gordon.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I love the end, but, you know, it's frustrating to me. Frustrating as fuck that DC, you know, like, you know, he's like Dick Grayson's talking to his dead parents. And he's like, I hope to marry Barbara one day. And it's like, we'll never see that because DC won't allow it. Like,
yeah. Or if they do, it'll be immediately before a retcon that restarts the universe.
Exactly. Yeah. Or someone's about to die. You know, it's frustrating to me. But Aaron, to your positive note, because I don't want to end this book on a negative note, because I actually did enjoy it. I'm just critical
overall,
of it.
The overall Tom King run on Nightwing, I very much enjoyed, with the exception of the Titans stuff.
Yeah, and I really, you know what I want to see him write? I want him to write a Tim Drake book, because he appreciates the character in a way that fits with my love of the character.
Agreed.
And, you know, it was interesting to me. I went to read this right before reading Batman and Robin Year One.
Mark Waid joint.
Yeah, it's Mark Waid is the writer. Chris Somnan. I mean, and don't get me wrong, Mark Waid, we're fans of Mark Waid, even though his DC stuff has not, you know, has been inconsistent
lately.
But Chris Somnan is the artist, and that's what sold me. I haven't seen a Chris Somnan book in a while.
Yeah.
At least, you know, nothing that's crossed my path. And so it was interesting reading what is essentially kind of like a finale for a huge Nightwing arc. And then in the other book reading, hey, this is literally Dick Grayson's first night out as Robin, is kind of what we get in this book. I actually really enjoyed it. It is, if you've read One Year One book, you've read them all, right? It's basically some type of retcon, some type of new way to tell the story of, of the origins of the characters. So this is, you know, Dick Grayson has been living with Bruce Wayne, and this is his first night out on the town as Robin. And it very much falls in line with most Year One books. I think it's funny because I think the One Year One book, I'm going to say one a lot, the Year One book that actually is different from the mold is the original, right? Is the one written by Frank Miller with art by David Mazzucchelli. I think that one brought something different to the plate, and I think the rest of them are kind of just, you know, safe stories, whereas that one was not.
Right.
That, you know, breaking Catwoman, a prostitute, you know, kind of really doing a strong retcon.
Bisexual.
This operates much more in the safe space, but it's comfort food, right? The book itself is comfort food. It's nice seeing Dick Grayson as a child. There is acknowledgement of his age by Commissioner Gordon, you know, in a way that obviously they wouldn't have referred to at the time. Right. But he's like, you know, he definitely calls out Batman. He's like, are you kidding me? He's so young. There's a conversation about that, you know, you have to acknowledge in today's storytelling that you didn't have to back in the 60s, or 40s, I guess, is when Robin came about. But I honestly, it's a very enjoyable book. And if you're a Chris Somnan fan, you know, he's got the right feel. It is very much just a classic Batman fun story.
I did not catch that on New Comic Book Day, and so I'm going to have to go back and grab it. Because you mentioned it afterwards. I'm like, I've got to grab that.
Yeah. But, now, that being said, I just want to clarify, you know, I recommend the book.
However, love Chris Somnan. I truly do. I mean, he is one of my favorite artists, and we get to see so little from him, in my opinion. I'd love to see him on more books.
Agreed.
Yeah, basically, I saw it come out on New Comic Day, and I just ignored it because I didn't catch the creators.
Right.
It wasn't until Paul pointed out that that's why he bought the book that I went back this morning and bought it myself. I just haven't read it yet.
And I know that we've said that, you know, Mark Waid's recent work at DC has been a little, you know, hit and miss.
Mostly I love his power, right? That's the one issue.
Well, I do love Mark Waid's and Dan Mora's work on World's Finest. It is a really strong book. But hey, Paul.
That's the creative team behind the new Justice League book.
Yeah, exactly. Excited about that. But Paul,
yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, since we're talking about DC, let's talk about what's coming out next week from DC. We have the new creative team coming in on Nightwing. So it's Dan Waters and Dexter Soy. I'm not honestly familiar. Dexter Soy, strong artist. Dan Waters is one of the co-writers on the recent Destro book from Skybound. He also wrote, I think he was the one of the writers on Absolute Power Task Force 7. He's written a number of things. He wrote a recent Creature from the Black Lagoon miniseries from Skybound that I quite liked. So he's taking over writing chores for Nightwing starting next week in issue 119. We also get new issues of Action Comics. Again, Mark Wade is the writer on that with Clayton Henry, who used to draw the Superboy Injustice Universe book, is the artist. So I'm looking forward to the second issue of that. Tom Taylor, now that he's done with Nightwing, has freed up some time to take over as the ongoing writer for Detective Comics. That kicks off next week with art by Michael Janine, who is just
a shot.
Brilliant artist.
Yeah, I'll give that a shot.
As well as the new creative team on Superman. So Joshua Williamson is still the writer on the ongoing Superman book, but the new artist is Dan Mora.
Dan Mora is pulling. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead. I apologize.
Oh no, I was going to say Dan Mora is doing double duty. He's doing the art on the new Justice League Unlimited book and Superman. And this features Lois Lane in her Superwoman.
That is what I was going to ask. Is the Superman book the one with Lois Lane as Superwoman? So I'm excited about that. Yep. I love those classic. I mean, I think it was 1950s when she first debuted as Superwoman. I've always enjoyed those books. So I'm eager to see that again.
Yeah. So that comes out next week. But the big new release from DC Comics is actually Absolute Wonder Woman issue 1.
I'll be checking that out as well.
Absolutely. I'm looking for it. That's funny. Now, from Marvel Comics, we have Conquest 2099, issue 2. You know,
continuing for that.
The story that we talked about last week. And the first issue of the new Iron Man. There's a new Iron Man, like we talked about, the latest volume of Iron Man is coming out. It's written by Spencer Ackerman, who is more of a novelist. He actually has experience in writing like military type books. He also wrote that Waller versus Wildstorm book from DC Comics that I don't think any of us read, the Black Label book.
Yeah, you know why? It has Waller and Wildstorm in it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
why read that book? Thanks for putting them both in the same book so that I don't have to read it.
Right. With art by Yasmin Putri, who I'm not 100% familiar with, but actually Yasmin Putri, I think, was the artist on Dark Knights of Steel. And I really liked the art on that. So I know I'm going to regret it, but I might give the new Iron Man first issue.
Do we know what the take is?
I will tell you. A new brutal era begins. Roxanne and AIM team up to take on Stark Unlimited, but they're ready for the old Tony Stark. This one, he's a lot angrier than he used to be. Iron Man is going to war. New armor, old enemies, and unbelievable twists abound in this fresh take on a fury-powered Iron Man from Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Spencer Ackerman and groundbreaking artist Julius Ota. So I guess Yasmin Putri is just doing the cover.
Mm.
I'm going to give the first issue a shot.
I'll take a look at the preview pages. I get frustrated when we always have to have so many new armors, you know.
Yeah.
I'd like them to stick with more of a classic look. But you know, maybe it works out. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
From Image Comics, we get the latest issues of Rook Exodus, which is the conclusion of the first arc of Rook Exodus, as well as the newest issue, starting a new story arc, Wayne, of Void Rivals, which features Pythona of Cobra Law.
Not Pythona.
Venturing deep into space. Pythona, this is probably more for Andrew. Pythona was one of the main villains from the G.I. Joe movie, animated movie. But, you know, it's Cobra Law, you know, is being brought into Void Rivals. So
yeah, no, if you want to get me to read Void Rivals, you have to bring the Transformers in.
Yeah, well, I think they're already there. But thankfully, Skybound sends us press copies. So so I'm going to check that one out. And finally, from IDW, we have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles issue 3, which is the, you know, run written by Jason Aaron. The artist on the third issue is Cliff Chang. And this issue features Leonardo.
I'm excited. That TMNT run by Jason Aaron has been fantastic. So I am looking forward to issue 3. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books, what you're thinking about Agatha all along. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise. And let me add that I found a lot more things that I had not put in the prize closet. So there is a wealth of items to distribute amongst the IOM geek fandom. Just saying.
Ooh, very exciting.
Yeah.
Or you can hit us up on social media. IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, or X.
Well, what a deal. Guys, it was great connecting with you today. It was great trying out the new studio, and I got to watch the front yard the entire podcast, and I've got to go out and
issue. No one went on his porch. Oh, wait.
Well, I have to go out and issue some notes to the neighborhood kids.
All right. You let them know. Don't cross this property line. Don't step on my grass.
He is so getting TP'd on Halloween.
Most likely. You guys have a good one.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.